Hey, Mike here. I just wanted to let you know that you can listen to Dark Poutine early and ad-free on Amazon Music, included with Prime. You're about to listen to a historical episode of Dark Poutine. After episode 149, you will find Scott is no longer with the show. In an effort to maintain continuity and offer listeners as many episodes as possible, we are leaving the episodes in which he co-hosted intact. Thank you. Is this thing on?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Welcome to Dark Poutine. I'm Mike Brown, creator and host. With me as usual is my good friend and co-host, Scott Hemingway. Say hello, Scott.
Hello, all the beautiful people listening.
Beautiful
hello,
people.
Hello to all the beautiful people listening. The beautiful people.
We did that.
We did it. It worked out pretty well.
The views, information, and opinions expressed during the Dark Poutine podcast are solely those of the producer and do not necessarily represent those of Curious Cast, its affiliate Global News, nor their parent company, Chorus Entertainment.
Dark Poutine is not for the faint of heart or squeamish. Listener discretion is strongly advised. We're not experts on the topics we present, nor are we journalists. We're two ordinary Canadians chatting about crime and the dark side of history. Let's get to it. Put on your toque, grab yourself a double-double and an Nanaimo bar. It's time to scarf down some dark poutine.
Om nom nom.
Om nom 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 nom. Episode 87.
Whew.
I graduated from high school in 87.
Oh, holy shit.
Yeah.
Wow. I was 92.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Well, that's because I'm old.
This is a very sad topic.
Graduating from high school?
Yeah, thanks for bringing
it. Did you actually graduate from high school?
What kind of a question is that? Wow.
I'm just being a turd.
No, I didn't.
You did?
No, I did. Yes, of course.
You didn't have to go back and get your GED, or as Malcolm calls it, your good enough diploma?
I had to go back a year later to get some extra credits.
Ah.
But not a GED.
No.
Good enough degree.
Good enough degree, yep. On with the show. This week takes us back to my home province, Nova Scotia. And this is the story of the murder of Amber Kerwin, who disappeared after leaving a New Glasgow pool hall in 2011.
Oh, okay. Interesting. There's a New Glasgow?
Yes. So New Glasgow was founded in 1776. It has a population of around 10,000 in the town itself and 34,000 in the outlying areas.
Okay.
It's in Pictou County, just off the Northumberland Strait, so you can pretty much look across and see PEI there.
Okay.
And the town was settled by surprise Scottish immigrants in the late 18th and early 19th century, which is where it's got its name.
My peoples.
Your peeps. An abundance of coal deposits and its proximity to the ocean transport helped it to grow initially. Its current economy is dependent on the Michelin tire plant nearby Granton, like the one in Bridgewater kind of thing.
Okay.
The northern pulp mill in Abercrombie and as well the local hospital. Helps to employ a lot of people.
Some decent employment around there?
Correct.
Sweet.
One of New Glasgow's most well-known sons is Mike Smith from nearby Thorburn, better known as...
Bubbles!
From the cult TV show Trailer Park Boys.
Yeah. Oh, one of the best. I haven't watched it in a long time, but my God.
You know, a dope trailer is no place for a kitty.
Look, Ricky!
I think I got a leech onto my bird.
Oh, it's a fucking Sam Squanch, Ricky.
The Green Bastard is one of my favorites.
Oh, that was a great one, yeah.
Yeah, if you don't know what we're talking about, go look at some Trailer Park Boys. You'll probably enjoy it.
Oh, it probably change your life.
It may.
I think so. It'll change. It's a game changer.
It will give you sort of an inside look at
some of the subculture around Nova Scotia.
Yeah. Well, it's not a sub. That's not a subculture I've experienced other than Trailer Park Boys, but it makes me want to.
I definitely experienced that subculture.
Oh my God, yes.
Yeah. On the evening of Saturday, October 8, 2011, Thanksgiving weekend, Amber Kerwin, 19, and her boyfriend, Mason Campbell, hosted a party that was attended by a few of their friends. The pair had moved in together in July of 2011, and by all accounts, they were in love. Campbell said that they were not just a couple, they were best friends as well. They were high school sweethearts who'd been together for about 4 years.
Okay.
Amber and a few of her friends decided to take the party elsewhere. Mason chose to stay behind. Amber and her friends were off to a popular local spot, Dooley's Billiard Room, at 60 Archimedes Street in downtown New Glasgow. And Dooley's is kind of a chain of billiard outfits and bars. Okay. Back in Nova Scotia, they had a Dooley's in my hometown for a while.
I do love me some pool. I haven't played it in a while, but I really do enjoy pool.
Yeah, my buddy Mike was quite a pool shark, and we used to play at the Dooley's in my hometown.
Oh, really?
He had a lot of trophies, actually.
Wow.
When Amber was ready to come home around 1:30 a.m., she called Mason with a friend's cell phone to come and get her. She'd forgotten her own cell phone at home. Mason was drunk, high, and driving illegally with no insurance or registration.
Quite the trifecta there.
Yeah. So he figured that he'd be better off picking up Amber somewhere else nearby rather than at the bar, which typically had New Glasgow's finest parked just outside as the bar closed.
Well, you know, or get a cab, I'm just saying, for those out there.
But yes, yeah. Don't drink and drive.
Yeah.
Mason told Amber he'd meet her around the corner from the bar at Big Al's convenience store, just a 4-minute walk along Provost Street. Surveillance video from Dooley shows Amber walking north on Archimedes Street. There was, in fact, a police car on her left out front of Dooley's, watching the bar patrons leaving, as they do. Yep. They want to make sure that everybody gets out safely and nobody drinks and drives.
Well, good on those.
New Glasgow police?
Yeah, New Glasgow authorities.
There you go. Amber crosses George Street and disappears from view along Archimedes. A car can be seen turning onto Archimedes moments after, heading in the same direction as Amber had been.
Oh, that's ominous.
The strip of Archimedes has a wooded area on the right with sparse lighting and a few residences or businesses as it arcs to join Provost Street at a fork about 100 meters later. Big Al's is another 100 meters or so down the street from the fork. So it's like a really quick walk.
Yeah, but I'm gathering just by the nature of population, size of the city, it's fairly rural.
Yeah.
Like it's...
It's a small town and it's dark.
Yes. It's not like walking around in a big city.
No, there's not a lot of people. You're probably going to be the only person on the street. Maybe one or two.
All right, gotcha.
According to Mason, Amber never arrived at Big Al's where he was waiting close by. Although Big Al's had been closed since 11 p.m. that night, the security cameras were still recording. The video showed Mason's car there idling, but only for a minute and 40 seconds before the car drove off. No one entered or exited the vehicle. There was no sign of Amber on the surveillance video from Big Al's or anywhere else after the grainy Dooley's video.
But this is a very short time to wait.
Yeah.
If you're waiting for somebody, a minute and a half is not like that's pretty much nothing.
Yep, that is a very short time.
That's very interesting. Okay.
Amber's friend, Maggie Chickness, who'd been at Dooley's with Amber, told the Pictou County News that Amber had only had one drink that night and seemed happy. From the Pictou News article, quote, "We are standing outside Dooley's in a group and we're getting ready to leave. She said she was going to go meet her boyfriend at Big Al's. We told her we would walk up with her and get our cab from there, but she said not to worry, she would be fine. She'd probably done the walk before."
Yeah, totally.
Maggie said she didn't give it another thought until Mason was texting her later, upset that Amber hadn't met him at Big Al's.
In that minute and a half.
Yes. After driving around looking for Amber with no luck, and a few frantic phone calls with friends and family, Mason drove home and went to bed at about 4 a.m. on October 9th, 2011. He had two cell phones, Amber's and his, and the landline phone by the bed, waiting for a call from Amber. None came.
Yeesh, okay.
Her family reported her missing around 5 p.m. on Sunday, October 9th. She hadn't shown up for dinner.
Okay.
Amber, usually chatty on social media and text, was not returning messages to anyone. Incredibly, in what would have been a walk of just over 200 meters, Amber Kerwin had vanished into thin air.
And, you know, it when you hear, like, usually on social media and chatty and this and that, it's easy to kind of be dismissive about that. But we all know people quite well, especially family members. And mm-hmm. It's really easy to identify when a behavioral pattern shifts, because it's not an extreme amount of time that has passed. But you can really tell when something just seems off.
Yep. Mason Campbell was questioned by police for about 4 hours in the early hours after Amber's disappearance.
Naturally.
Yeah. As police began searching for Amber, they also talked to known sex offenders and recently paroled violent offenders living in the area. No one claimed any knowledge of Amber's whereabouts.
Yeah.
Areas of focus were the usual spots, wooded areas, riverbanks, and abandoned buildings. The large Tibbetts paint factory in Trenton, just 2 kilometers up the road from Big Al's, was scoured by police, and with dogs and everything. It had been a place known for nefarious activity and even urban exploration, which both of us kind of dig.
Yeah, very.
Ever since it had been closed down and abandoned years prior, it was scheduled for demolition November of that year, so a month after all this happened.
Yep.
So the cops think maybe there's something in there that they should see. But they found nothing.
Nothing, eh?
Yeah. A missing persons flyer was released, along with a photograph of the pretty 19-year-old. The missing poster read that Amber Kerwin was last seen wearing a blue and black shirt and flat black shoes. She was roughly 5'1" tall and weighed around 130 pounds. Amber had brown hair, hazel eyes, and 2 tattoos, a dragonfly on her back and a star on her right foot. The poster was everywhere in Pictou County and even the rest of Nova Scotia, on walls and telephone poles. Even some large windows in local homes and businesses were plastered over with Amber's missing poster.
I love how quickly everybody is acting on this. Police and everybody, like they're...
Well, it's unusual for someone to go missing like this.
Well, and a small town has perks, but it also has negatives when it comes to small town
gossip. And
well, but small town policing, one of the benefits, though, is there's usually not a hell of a lot going on.
Mm-hmm.
And so although you don't have a lot of police, you can really sink your teeth into something large when it happens and focus your energies there.
It was like that in Bridgewater. A lot of the cops usually knew who they had to look at.
Yeah, well, exactly. And some of the other benefits of a small town.
Yeah. As is common in small towns, even people who don't know someone will typically join in searches for them.
Yeah.
Even though it was Thanksgiving, many came out to support the search for Amber, including her boyfriend, Mason Campbell.
Mm-hmm.
The neighborhood that Amber lived in with Mason was 10 kilometers away. It's called Pictou Landing. That was the early focus.
Okay.
Police, divers, and Zodiac rescue boats, even some kayaks, scoured the East River and the waters near Big Gut Bridge. And apparently Big Gut Bridge is one of those ones that people may take a header off every once in a while.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
So somebody may want to go swimming or may want to hurt themselves.
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay.
Facebook groups were created, ballooning quickly to over 8,000 members, asking folks to call Crime Stoppers with any information helping in bringing Amber home. Someone had to know something.
Mm-hmm.
The rumors, of course, were flying. Many posts pointed their assumptive fingers right at Mason Campbell.
Which is, again, understandable. I mean, that is the typical go-to for crimes of this nature.
And that's the thing that the police will probably investigate first, which is why their focus is probably near their home in Pictou Landing.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, and he was probably grilled more than once by the police about this situation.
Oh, I'm sure for the first while anyways, he was the primary focus of police interrogation and investigation.
He may have even been under some surveillance. We don't know. Mason told CTV News, quote, "That's the last thing I want to hear going around. That doesn't help any bit of this situation. You know, I loved her with all my heart. I was going to spend the rest of my life with her. When she's turned up, I will spend every single day of my life with her.
So I know a lot of people will clue into the speaking of her in the past tense.
Well, he's saying when she's turned up.
But that, you know, he says that afterwards. You know, I loved her with all my heart. I was going to spend the rest of my, was going to. And so, and then.
We'll see if that means anything at all.
Yeah, well, I mean, if because in the same vein, you don't have to be a genius to recognize when somebody has just vanished like this that, yeah, something bad's likely happened.
Right.
And you're exhausted,
mm-hmm.
Fatigue, stress, like, yeah. So it is also an easy slip of the tongue.
Mason's car was also seized early on with hope of finding some clues. Cops found nothing in his car. Over the next week, a wall of hope was set up by well-wishers near Dooley's, where Amber was last seen, and many people dropped off cards, pictures, posters, flowers, and teddy bears, all hoping for Amber's safe return.
Yeah.
During the first week of the search, groups of locals took part in candlelight vigils, and more than 100 of them congregated downtown that Saturday, marking a week since Amber's disappearance, to form a human ribbon in her honor.
Oh, wow.
RCMP were involved as well by now, lending their helicopter to the search, as well as ground officers and canine units. A $5,000 reward was being offered for Amber's safe return. Police were still calling the disappearance a missing persons case at this point.
Yeah.
Some believed Amber had run off with somebody and maybe even gone to Halifax.
Okay.
Posters blanketed that city as well, but no one had seen Amber there. Mason and other friends and family didn't believe that Amber had just vanished. She was not the type of person who would just drop everyone and not call or message in some way.
Mm-hmm.
She was protective of her younger brother in particular, texting him multiple times a day, but she'd even stopped that since the night of her disappearance.
Yeah, again, it's when you're close to somebody, you can notice these pretty large
deviances in pattern.
Deviances.
The chatter that Amber was being held somewhere against her will started to emerge, as well as the more morbid assumptions that Amber Kerwin had been murdered. But police remained tight-lipped.
Well, yeah. The odds are... I'm not even going to say that.
Yeah, you don't want to go there.
Yeah.
What they were not telling the public at the time is that on October 14th, 3 days after Amber's disappearance, some of her belongings had been discovered next to a logging road in Heathbell, Nova Scotia. And Heathbell is a small rural community, a 23-kilometer drive west, past the town of Pictou. So, what cops discovered was disturbing. A local woman and her common-law husband found what police believed to be Amber's torn black leggings and a pair of earrings that Amber had recently obtained in some nearby brush. Apparently, they were hanging from a tree.
Okay, yeah, that's absolutely... not a good sign. 23 kilometers isn't incredibly far, but it's still a good chunk of distance.
Yeah. Nova Scotia, that's quite a ways.
Is it, eh?
Yeah. Yep. It's a town or two over, right? So.
Okay.
For obvious reasons, police began focusing their efforts closer to Heathbell. They also held this evidence close to their vest. They didn't want to talk about it.
Yeah, yeah.
They searched the wooded area and part of the property where the clothing was found on the north side of Heathbell Road for over 30 hours, but they didn't find anything else.
Oh, man, you would think that I would have been thinking they would have. It must have been a disappointment for them, too.
For sure. Like, you find some things that are very obvious evidence.
Yeah, you're hoping that maybe you're going to find.
Mm-hmm. Especially because, you know, these are things that folks knew that she had.
Yeah, earrings specifically. Yep. Yeah, that's something you can really...
Prior to the discovery of this evidence, police had spoken to a Heathbell man regarding Amber's disappearance. Christopher Alexander Faulkner, 27, was on parole at the time. Faulkner had been evasive, but there was no evidence to hold him at the time. Now that this evidence had been found so close to residents that Faulkner was connected with, they gave him another hard look.
So I guess he's probably one of those names that they immediately, when this happened, were like, oh... This is somebody we know of.
Yes, and you'll see why they know of him here.
Oh, okay,
in a bit.
Okay.
On October 26, 2011, police interviewed Faulkner and taped the conversation from an article in the Pictou County Advocate. Quote, when he was asked if he had anything to do with the disappearance of Kerwin, he replied, no, I did not. When asked why they should believe him, Faulkner said, I didn't do it. It's not my thing. Kidnapping's not my thing. I'm trying to stay away from the past. I'm trying to straighten up. I just like sitting home and having a beer, end quote. The investigator asked, quote, what's not your thing? Going to the bar is not your thing? You mentioned kidnapping. And Faulkner said, going to the bars and taking girls home. I've never had a one-night stand. It's not my thing. End quote.
Okay, that's pretty specific.
He mentioned kidnapping before the police
did. Yeah.
Faulkner did not have any verifiable alibi for his whereabouts on Thanksgiving weekend either. He was asked why he thought they were talking to him, and Faulkner was frustrated, but not surprised that he'd been brought in. He said, I know it's just 12 years ago. I'm always suspected by association.
Okay. Yeah.
And here's where we should tell you a little more about Christopher Alexander Faulkner.
Yes, please.
Why was he on parole, you ask?
What had he done 12 years ago?
Exactly. When Faulkner was 15 years old, he and a friend, Fraser Wilson Kennedy, were arrested and charged and convicted in adult court for the murder of 53-year-old taxi driver Robert Gerald LeBlanc in Pictou, Nova Scotia.
So at 15, he was convicted of murder.
Yes.
Well
in
now.
In adult court.
Well now.
On July 2nd, 1998, the pair robbed LeBlanc, a father of three, of $65 and a pack of smokes.
Oh,
they strangled him with a wire, beat him with a hammer, and stuffed his body in the trunk of his own taxi, and then went joyriding. They soon tired of doing that and dropped the car off. The older man had just picked them up as a fare only minutes before the robbery and murder. So he's just doing his job.
This is the shit. For $65 and a pack of cigarettes, a man's life is gone.
A father of three.
Gone. Gone, and then you go for a goddamn joyride
with
the body in the trunk.
In the trunk, yeah.
Oh.
Faulkner and Kennedy abandoned the cab and went to the home of a girlfriend where they played pool. After they were arrested, they were charged with murder, and both these young men's cases were elevated to adult court where they were tried.
Yeah.
They both pleaded guilty to second-degree murder and sentenced to life without the possibility of parole for 7 years. And this is the maximum allowed in the youth offender cases we've talked about before.
So tried in adult court but sentenced as juveniles?
Nope, they were sentenced as adults, but as juveniles, 7 years is the maximum allowed before they're allowed to apply for parole.
Okay.
So they're still sentenced to life. Which, as a juvenile, you would only be sentenced to 3 years, tops.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Wow.
Yes, it's crazy. Kennedy, Faulkner's partner, applied for parole in 2004 and 2006, and he was denied both times. He was deemed to be a 2 out of 5 on the recidivism checklist, and in the board's opinion, would be likely to commit another indictable offense. So,
I guess the higher the number, then?
The higher the better.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So he's pretty much at the bottom.
Right.
One away from.
Yeah, he's not doing so well.
No.
Faulkner, who'd been transferred to adult prison early as he, quote, posed a risk to other inmates in the youth facility, was given full parole in May of 2011, just months before Amber Kerwin would disappear.
Jeez.
Right?
So he's only out for a few months.
Yes. This is October that we're looking for her.
Okay, yeah, I get why the police are interested in him.
So the parole board said that Faulkner had participated in programs and was gradually being reintegrated, quote, with escorted temporary absences, work releases, and unescorted temporary absences, end quote. He also showed that, quote, a change in attitude began to surface. Your good institutional conduct and evidence of change earned you access to the community, end quote.
Wait a minute. Something just dawned on me.
What?
So he spent most of his adult life in prison.
Yes.
And his one of his excuses is, I've never had a one-night stand. Well, yeah, you're in prison. I don't think you. It's not that easy to have one-night stands in prison, I'm thinking.
Well, he's been out since.
For a couple months.
Yeah.
He makes it sound like in his history of this long life that I've lived, I haven't, you know, haven't ever had a one-night stand.
Yeah.
Whilst in prison.
Yes. Well, maybe he had a relationship in prison. We don't know.
That's not a one-night stand.
That's right.
Yeah.
Anyway, the team responsible for tracking Faulkner's progress in the system felt that he'd been successfully rehabilitated, and with ongoing psychological counseling, he'd do well in release. The report said, quote, you have secured independent accommodations and will be expected to maintain employment. At this juncture, you have completed all required programs and continue to enjoy the support of your family. With a special condition related to negative associates, your case management team believes your risk is manageable on a full parole release. End quote. How about them apples?
See, so I'm upset at it, and I'm thinking, what a load of shit. He shouldn't have been given parole. But I do.
That's why he jumped through the hoops.
I do put a lot of faith, and I completely appreciate and recognize how difficult the job of a parole officer is. Mm-hmm. And so, like, parole officers, everybody involved in the parole of an individual, I know they don't take that lightly. I know they're not dismissive of it and just like, oh, whatever, let's let them out. They put a lot into it that doesn't make it easier to digest.
Right. So police redoubled their efforts in the search off Heathbell Road, where the items belonging to Amber had been discovered. On November 5th, 2011, while searching the other side of the large property, this time investigators came across a patch of soil that appeared to have been disturbed recently.
Oh boy.
After gritting the area off, searchers uncovered the naked body of a female buried face down, arms tied behind her back with cloth and caked in mud.
Oh, shit.
Investigators knew to look for distinctive tattoos, and sure enough, there they were. A dragonfly on her back, and a star on her right foot.
Oh, God.
Amber Kerwin had been found. Amber's remains were exhumed and taken for autopsy and forensic testing, a rape kit and toxicology screening at what was then called Victoria General Hospital in Halifax. It's now called the QE2.
Okay.
The rest of the area nearby was scoured for other evidence, all carefully cataloged. Cause of death was determined to be homicide by way of sharp force injury. Amber had been stabbed in the upper back and neck at least 10 times.
Oh.
The fatal wound, though, had been through the chest, a single stab wound to the heart.
Oh, this poor girl.
Amber's hands also showed defensive wounds that, of themselves, would have been extremely painful. She had fought her attacker hard.
Good.
It was the worst news Amber's family could hear. They were devastated. Amber's obituary read in part, Amber Donna Kerwin, 19, Stellarton, was born in Antigonish on August 21st, 1992, to loving parents Donald Glenn and Marjorie Helen Mason Kerwin. Stellarton, their treasured angel, has joined their papa and cousin in heaven. Amber was a graduate of Northumberland Regional High School, Alma, and was currently attending NSCC Pictou Campus in Stellarton. So it's Nova Scotia Community College. She was a member of Our Lady of Lourdes, Roman Catholic Church, Stellarton. Amber was employed with Proudfoot's Home Hardware in New Glasgow, where she enjoyed working with her co-workers and helping customers. Her professional goal in life was to become a nurse, and she was recently accepted into the Licensed Practical Nurse Program at the Nova Scotia Community College Pictou Campus. Amber was a caring girlfriend and a loyal friend. Her family were very important to her. She never missed an opportunity to express her love. Amber will be forever remembered as Liam's Umba, Mom's beautiful daughter, and Dad's little girl.
Holy shit, how that's just like, oh, that poor family. She just sounds, as often we talk about in the cases we cover,
just a sweet
just
girl.
Just a wonderful person. A normal 19-year-old kid.
Wants to go on to nursing, so she had that really altruistic streak in her.
Yeah.
You know?
But, you know, but...
Wants to help others.
Is going to do things 19-year-olds do. You're going to have a drink or two.
Yeah.
You're going to experiment with things, but sounds like somebody who absolutely has a great head on her shoulder and has ambitions and goals.
Yeah. And her future was snuffed out.
Yeah, by some...
Someone.
Some dickhead.
Funeral services were held at 11 a.m. Saturday, November 12th in Our Lady of Lourdes Roman Catholic Church in Stellarton, with Father Bill Rankin presiding. Amber Kerwin was interred in Our Lady of Lourdes Cemetery. And we'll take a break right here.
If you're looking for a smoking gun, I can absolutely guarantee you, you will not find it.
In October 2001, a series of letters filled with a deadly powder called anthrax were dropped into the U.S. mail system. What started as an unprecedented case turned into an unsettling mystery. Who sent these deadly letters, and why? From Campside Media and Sony Music Entertainment, I'm Josh Dean, and this is Cover Up Season 4, The Anthrax Threat. Available now.
Yeah.
And we're back. Just a 5-minute drive away from the makeshift gravesite was the mobile home of Alice Meyer, Christopher Faulkner's stepsister. She lived at 976 Hardwood Hill Road. A beat-up travel trailer was parked next to it. It was time for the cops to talk to Alice and see what she had to say. Maybe she knew something, or better yet, there would be evidence that the cops could collect.
Hmm.
Alice and Faulkner had lost touch when he'd been incarcerated for LeBlanc's murder, but they'd become close again once Faulkner was spending time at a local halfway house. Now he and Alice were close. He crashed on her couch when he needed a place, or if Alice was afraid of being alone with her daughters. She'd had a violent ex, so Faulkner agreed to stay over just in case sometimes.
So was he? So he was in a halfway house at this point?
No, no.
Or that was just in the past, like when he got released?
Yeah.
Okay.
Full parole means no halfway house. Alice had not been home on the evening October 8th and the morning of October 9th. She and her girls were out visiting friends at a cottage in nearby Caribou, just north of Pictou. Faulkner was texting her on the morning of October 9th, 2011. We got these text messages from the Pictou County Advocate coverage of his later trial. At 9:25 a.m. from Faulkner, he texted, "Hey girl, I was at your place last night. I got some stuff in the trailer. I'll be back to get it tonight." At 10:06, she texted him back, "Okay, you can leave them, whatever it is there, if you don't have a place for them." A minute later, Faulkner shot back, "Just my pipe, laptop, and things in the trailer, not the mini home." So he's talking about the travel trailer next door. Alice found this odd, as the trailer was there for storage only. It was filled with stuff, and it was never used. As far as Alice knew, Faulkner had never slept in there, and it was full of junk. Faulkner would show up sometimes in the middle of the night unannounced and would be found sleeping on her couch the next morning, but she was fine with that because she felt safe with him around.
Yeah, yeah.
But, like I said, he'd never slept in the trailer outside.
Yeah, yeah. The night that she went missing.
Alice texted Faulkner back at 10:09, "When I go home, do you want me to take your stuff in and put it somewhere else?" And again, Faulkner shot back, said, "No, I got to go to Dad's at 4 p.m. Thank you, though. Just letting you know is all." Chris Faulkner was arrested and charged with unauthorized possession of a restricted firearm and possession of drugs after a bit of a raid. He was held pending hearing to revoke the parole he'd received on his life sentence. The same day at 4:40 p.m., Alice Meyer posted on Facebook, quote, "I wish people would stop with the rumors. The media causes enough just trying to make the best story to get the sales. Life is hard enough in the Maritimes. I really don't need people making up stories. Let's just all remember Amber and wait for the real truth to come out, and then yous can say what you want. Thanks," end quote.
I mean, She's wanting to believe her brother.
Yeah, exactly.
And I get that. And you're going to be protective. And
in her defense, she had no idea what was about to be found in the travel trailer next to her home. Who would want to believe that a family member was capable of such a heinous murder? Not me.
No, not me.
Even if he had been to jail before for murder. The search of Alice's trailer turned up some disturbing evidence that established Amber Kerwin had, in fact, been in that camper.
Oh, shit.
From court documents, strands of Amber's hair were located on the bed.
Yep.
There was duct tape with the mirror image of a blue ink stamp from Dooley's. So, you know, when you go in,
you
get the blue ink stamp. And so there was duct tape there with the mirror
I guess from around her hand,
Wrists.
The back of her hand.
Yep.
Oh.
Distinctive towels from the camper that matched the fabric used to bind Amber were found. She was found in that shallow grave.
Yep.
Bound, but the fabric from these towels, which had been torn into strips, were found there. Mm. Fragments of the fabric on the floor of the camper matched fabric from Amber's sweater, also found on her body. A Dasani water bottle was also seized, and in it, there were trace amounts of codeine and acetaminophen. Amber Kerwin's blood toxicology test revealed a quantity of codeine, acetaminophen, and caffeine consistent with having taken Tylenol 3s.
Oh.
Christopher Faulkner was known to be a user of Tylenol 3s.
Okay.
The level of codeine in Amber's blood was 10 to 100 times higher than the regular therapeutic range, and the codeine was in the body long enough to begin to break down. There were no pill pieces found in Amber's stomach contents, which means it either broke down before her death or it had been crushed up and put into the water bottle.
That's what I would. That's where my mind was going.
I think crushed
up and put into the water bottle.
Vehicles known to be used by Christopher Faulkner were also seized and gone over for evidence. According to court documents, in Faulkner's car were latex gloves, which would explain the lack of fingerprints in the travel trailer.
Mm-hmm.
Another Dasani water bottle.
Okay.
A partially used roll of duct tape, matching the duct tape that had been found on Amber's hands.
Yep.
A plastic shopping bag. And in the shopping bag was more duct tape, an extra large black tank top identified as belonging to Faulkner. Tests revealed the presence of human blood on that top.
Hmm.
DNA on the tank top matched that of Amber, Faulkner himself, and another unknown individual.
Pretty damning stuff so far.
Also in the car was an empty pill bottle with trace amounts of codeine, acetaminophen, and caffeine. So again, more Tylenol 3 stuff. A vaginal swab tested positive for semen, but no DNA could be extracted as the sample had degraded with decomposition. All three vaginal swabs, as well as the rectal, vulva, and anal swabs, showed the same results, but there was still not enough to get a DNA profile. Right? A knife belonging to Faulkner was tested. There was DNA on it, but too small a sample to get any matches.
They can do mitochondrial DNA testing, I guess.
It was much too small to get any kind of sample from. Much of the DNA evidence was inconclusive from the many articles that were collected. There was a hat found at the gravesite. There were other things found nearby, and all of them had DNA on them, but nothing matched, or nothing provided enough of a sample, I should say.
Oh, how frustrating is that?
Most of the evidence against Christopher Alexander Faulkner would be circumstantial, but the police were at work collecting a pile of it.
Yeah, there's some pretty strong circumstantial evidence so far.
Right, but it's circumstantial.
Yep. It's not like having DNA that you can test.
Cell phone tower records place Faulkner in the areas he'd need to have been in to commit the murder.
Mm.
He also stopped responding to the multiple texts he'd been receiving around the time of Amber's disappearance and didn't resume responding until early the next morning.
Mm.
And that was unusual for him.
Yeah.
One of Faulkner's girlfriends told police that near the end of October, he had awakened in the middle of the night with his heart pounding. He told her that he was sick.
Okay.
There was more strange behavior, too. The same girlfriend saw Faulkner on Facebook at one of the local library computers. When she approached, asking Faulkner what he was up to, he quickly closed the browser. She got angry and left. Faulkner followed her and told the woman that he'd recently tried to commit suicide using T3s. She stopped being angry and grew concerned. And so he carefully deflected that conversation.
Yeah, yeah.
On February 16th, 2012, Christopher Faulkner's parole for his 1998 murder conviction was revoked based on his possession of a restricted weapon and drugs. Although I'm sure being the main suspect in another murder didn't help either.
Yeah, no, no it didn't.
No. On May 17th, police brought Christopher Alexander Faulkner, a convicted killer, from his cell in Dorchester to face new charges of first-degree murder and kidnapping in the death of Amber Kerwin 7 months prior.
Good.
Faulkner was not talking, but he wasn't helping his case much in jail either.
Yeah.
He'd been recorded saying some rather incriminating things while on the monitored prison phone with his family and friends.
Oh, wait a minute. So this guy's a moron?
Aren't they all?
Well, but that's what I'm like.
Yeah.
Like, go figure. He's so stupid.
He's not saying anything directly to police. But hang on.
But you know prison phones are recorded.
Yep. Among other questionable conversations, at one point Faulkner can be heard on tape saying, "No, but they're trying. From what they're saying, this whole thing doesn't look very good." And this was him talking to a friend. Mm-hmm. "I was thinking I'm just going to plead guilty to everything."
My dog knows that police calls or prison calls are
recorded.
But
he didn't say what he had done. He didn't say he had done anything.
I know, but all you should be saying on that prison phone is, "No, I have no idea."
In a recorded conversation with his father, Faulkner said, "In here, there are a lot of rumors going around. They don't like what happened before with me and my co-accused. I haven't been told nothing by anyone." His father pleaded with Christopher not to plead guilty. "Some people figured I did it," said Faulkner. His father replied, "Yeah, but some people think it wasn't you. I figure they couldn't find anything in the car. Otherwise, I wouldn't have got it back." When it came to time to plead, Faulkner pled not guilty.
Yeah.
He wanted to leave his fate up to the jury. On January 6, 2014, Christopher Faulkner's first-degree murder trial began. Over the first 12 days of the trial, the prosecution called witness after witness to present evidence against Faulkner. His defense team harped on the circumstantial nature of most of the evidence as the trial went on. One of the most memorable moments from the trial was Mason Campbell's testimony. Here's some audio from Global News from that day.
For the second day in a row, Mason Campbell was in front of a packed courtroom testifying in the murder trial of his girlfriend, Amber Kerwin.
He did his best to tell the jury his experience when Amber went missing and his efforts to find her. And
Campbell says he told Amber to meet him at Big Al's convenience store instead of the bar because he was drunk, high, and driving illegally. Kerwin wasn't there when he arrived, so Campbell drove a friend home, came back to the meeting spot, waited for just 1 minute, and went home. He testified it was out of character for her not to come home, but he watched TV, played guitar, and fell asleep. The next day is when he started to realize something was wrong. When asked why he never informed Amber's parents, Donald and Marjorie Kerwin, that Amber was missing, he said he didn't want to worry them. Under cross-examination, the defense asked if Campbell or Kerwin knew Chris Faulkner, the man charged in her murder. He testified they never met him. Taylor pressed at several inconsistencies in statements given to police by Campbell after Amber went missing, specifically about time frames.
Ultimately, again, the jury's going to have to determine how important it is to have a witness repeat over and over, "I can't recall." That can impact on how they view his evidence as a whole.
It was also learned that a shovel and duct tape were seized from Campbell's car by police, and that police repeatedly told him to stop becoming involved in the investigation.
Those are just items that a jury might find interesting given the type of case we're dealing with.
The other key witnesses today were Lisa Williams and Nathan Goodall. The couple found leggings and a pair of feathered earrings on their property in Heathville. That site is near Faulkner's stepsister's home and the site where Kerwin's remains were found. Natasha Pace, Global News, Pictou.
So some interesting developments there.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd say.
So there was duct tape
and a shovel in
the back of his car.
Yeah.
Yet somebody else is on trial for murder.
Yeah.
Fascinating, eh?
The plot twist.
Yeah, exactly. And so, you know, you just go home and play guitar after your girlfriend doesn't show up. And
well, that was something right off, like what I was saying right off the bat. Wait a minute and a half?
Yeah.
You know,
But and he drove down the road and looked for her and couldn't find her. And
if you said, come pick me up, and I go to where you say, come pick me up.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to wait a minute and a half and start driving. I'm going to give it some time.
Yeah.
20 minutes, 30 minutes, and then be like, okay, maybe I'm in the wrong spot. Let me try calling. Oh, I can't get hold. Maybe I'm in the wrong spot. Now let me drive around. Not just be like, well, I've waited 90 seconds. What more can I do?
Yeah.
It very well could just be that he's like, you know, well, you know what? She told me to be here. I'm coming to pick her up. She's not here. Fuck it. I'm going. Like.
Yeah, could have been that.
Who knows the dynamics? So.
Yeah, who knows?
But it's a plot twist nonetheless.
The only witness for the defense was Scott Faulkner, Christopher's father. He testified that the conversations on the tape where Christopher was talking about pleading guilty was just his son feeling hopeless, as though he was being railroaded.
Yeah, sure. Okay.
Again, from the Pictou County Advocate, in his closing statement, Crown Attorney Bill Gorman said, quote, fingerprints and DNA were not found in the camper, but in the Chev Impala, an open box of latex gloves were found in the trunk. Isn't it logical and reasonable in inference that he used the gloves? Asked Gorman. This evidence is a rock when you put it all together. Everything, everything, everything points to the accused, and it's the only rational conclusion. End quote.
I mean, yes, there's a lot of
circumstantial evidence.
Circumstantial, but a lot of that evidence there.
Yes. The jury didn't buy the thin defense. They were sold on the Crown's case against Faulkner, but it took them 7.5 hours to come back with a verdict.
Yeah, it's a healthy deliberation.
In the end, they found Christopher Alexander Faulkner not guilty of first-degree murder, but found him guilty of second-degree murder in the death of Amber Donna Kerwin.
Oh, for a second, I thought he was just going to be not guilty.
Yeah.
Oh.
Faulkner, now a 2-time convicted murderer, was sentenced to life in prison with no eligibility of parole for 25 years.
Yeah.
Here's some post-trial reactions outside the courtroom, as picked up by Global News on that day.
This is the last time Chris Faulkner will see the outside of a jail cell for a very long time. The 31-year-old was convicted of first-degree murder this afternoon. The jury deliberated for just 7.5 hours before giving their verdict.
They obviously took their tasks and their duties very seriously and arrived at what we believe is the correct result.
Please. Disappointed, obviously. I think he was thinking that there was a decent chance of an acquittal because of the time they were taking.
Faulkner's father, Scott, and stepmother, Sue Kelly, were inside to hear the verdict, but Faulkner's grandfather, who never missed a day in the trial, showed up a few minutes late and had to hear the news from his son. Flint Bonvie and his wife have been at the trial almost every day watching the proceedings.
We're happy for the family, the Kerwin family. We've been following this for the past few years, and we're very happy that justice has been served.
Marjorie Kerwin began crying as soon as the guilty verdict was read inside the courtroom.
Are you guys pleased with the verdict?
Very.
This is a tragedy that I don't think they'll ever get past.
Oof. So there you go. He's going back to jail.
Mm-hmm. 25 years before parole.
Before he can apply for parole.
Apply for parole, yeah. Yes.
Because he was convicted of murder once before, so.
I'm curious on the second-degree murder. Is that just because the jury didn't feel confident enough that, like, there was
question.
No DNA or
That's a great finger, question.
Yeah.
The difference between first and second-degree murder is that there was pre-planning to murder somebody. But, I mean, with the duct tape, you could say, yeah, he had pre-planned kidnapping, but not necessarily pre-planned murder. I know it's kind of thin, but
that's a good point.
He did murder during the commission of an offense, but that was hard to prove too.
Yeah,
because there was no DNA profiles able to be obtained from the swabs,
and they can't. I guess it's they can't prove that he kidnapped her. I'm sure
even though there's duct tape and
well, but that could have been he lured her and then, which I don't believe. I'm just trying to put myself in the jury's shoes.
Well, luring equals kidnapping too. If you get in the car and then you're not allowed out.
Well, but I'm like, again, if I'm in the jury shoes and I'm trying to, it is possible that she went with him voluntarily until they got to the house, and at that point he subdued her. But
So, what do you think about an appeal? Do you think he's going to appeal?
Yeah, of course. Everybody appeals.
Well, representing himself, Falconer did appeal. He filed.
It's always great to represent yourself.
He was claiming he'd received inadequate counsel, considering the circumstantial nature of the evidence presented against him, and that the judge erred in his jury instructions by conflating admissions with concessions about the admissibility of certain evidence. And so what he's referring to is the taped phone conversations.
Yep.
What do you think happened with his appeal?
I'm thinking, so representing himself, so yep. He already thought he had insufficient lawyering.
Yep.
So what better way to fix that than lawyer yourself?
Well,
So appeal denied.
Yeah, his appeal was thrown out.
Yeah.
2 years to the day of her death, the town of New Glasgow received a donation of a memorial monument to Amber Kerwin placed on the Sampson Trail.
Oh.
On top of the monument is a dedication to all the women, men, and children who have lost their lives to a senseless tragedy. And on the front side is engraved a stone plaque with a laser-engraved photo of Amber beside the seaside. Yeah. Her date of birth, August 21st, 1992, and the date of her death, October 9th, 2011. And the inscription beside it reads, Amber Kerwin, Pictou County's Angel.
Oh, that is heartwarming. It's such a sad, sad case. But wow, that's a beautiful gesture.
A couple of points of interest about Alice Meyer's Facebook page, and this is the stepsister of Christopher Falconer. In a post from 2012, a child can be seen in the company of Nova Scotia singer-songwriter Dave Gunning. And why this is important is, ironically, Gunning wrote a song about Christopher Falconer's first murder victim, cab driver Robert Gerald LeBlanc, and he called the song Taxiphone.
Whoa.
Weird.
Whoa. So I'm going to assume she didn't know?
I don't know. That's a great question, Scott.
Wow.
I don't know. Meyer's account, her Facebook account, has gone quiet since the conviction of Falconer in Amber's murder, at least publicly. The profile picture, though, that she's left us with is of her smiling, sitting on a picnic table in front of the travel trailer that she sold just before her stepbrother's murder trial. This was Amber Kerwin's murder scene.
I'm going to try to give her the benefit of the doubt. And, you know, she may have just been, her main thought may have been, well, this is my fate. Like, I look my best in this photo, and it's just about aesthetics. It's just about, she might just be thinking that I look great in front and not paying attention to, but that's pretty poor taste, man.
Yeah. I don't know if it's intentional.
I want to say it's not. I don't want to.
But it's weird. It's just, it's too weird not to mention.
You would think at least, like, at some point during this time that has passed, you'd go, yeah, that's not cool. I mean, I should probably pull that down. But maybe she's just like, yeah, I'm done social media, and just doesn't log in, doesn't
tapped
check
out. Yeah.
Yeah, and so that's why she's just sitting there, because she's just like, no, fuck this, I don't.
Because I can imagine. I mean, she was kind of one of the star witnesses in the trial.
Mm-hmm.
She had to testify against her stepbrother about, you know, all these texts and his behavior and all that kind of stuff. So,
and I would imagine she must have been inundated with venom.
Oh, for sure.
Just
from,
like,
a small town, that's kind of the way it works.
Yeah. And so I could completely understand why somebody would be like, you know what? I'm just going to, like, log off here.
Exactly. I'm kind of done with the whole social media thing, because people are not being nice to me. So maybe she has another account somewhere, and this is just one.
Most likely so.
Yeah.
But hopefully there's not a photo of her sitting in front of the trailer or whatever else.
Oh, God. Well, yeah, who knows?
I'm gonna hypothesize she liked the photo and put it up there a long time ago. Shit's happened, and she's just like, I'm out of this thing.
There you go. Way to go, Scott. So you're great at that benefit of the doubt thing.
Yeah. Well, she seemed, from what little we know, I mean, she seemed like a rational.
Reasonable
individual.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's it for this week's story. Holy crap. So,
I feel like we just covered this one on Bowen Island.
Kind of.
You know, very different outcome, because there is an outcome. But, yeah.
But
like, it's just...
And that's why I kind of wanted to cover it, because of the similarity.
Mm-hmm.
And people would start to think, oh, it's the boyfriend right away.
Yeah, I did.
And surprise, there was an anonymous person who she didn't know.
Yep.
You know, or her boyfriend. They weren't familiar with this person at all, apparently.
Yeah, yeah. But it's just, so much youth tragedy. Mm-hmm. You know, we're looking at, there's a lot of comparison with the two when it comes to age and innocence. And
also, what was compelling to me was the fact that he's a two-time murderer.
No kidding. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Like, he'd already, as a young man, well, a kid, really, he'd murdered a taxi driver with his buddy for $65 and a pack of smokes.
And it's a brutal murder. Like, you strangled somebody. That
and
is
then
a
hit
very,
them on the head with a hammer.
That is a very personal way to kill.
Yep.
And that says a lot about his character.
Yeah, it's kind of tough to wrap your brain around.
Yeah, very.
Let's move on to some fun. All right, it's time for Patreon shoutouts. And the first one came along with a message.
Oh, I love messages.
And it's from Tim Roberts and his wife, Lindy.
Oh, hi, Lindy.
In the UK. And they wanted to say how much they love the podcast. Okay, so anyway, there you go.
Lindy!
Thank you, Tim and Lindy.
I've known many a Lindy.
But
none as awesome
as this one in Devon in the UK.
Exactly.
Lindy.
This is the best of the Lindys. Trust me. I know my Lindys.
Exactly. Thank you. Joey and Jesse Henu.
Okay. Yes.
I don't know where they're from.
You don't.
But Henu.
Henu, yeah. It's a typical German name.
Okay.
But they're not German.
They're not.
No, they're not, which complicates things. There.
Did you just fart?
No, okay. I just moved my leg.
Okay.
Which, I mean, might probably smelled as well. But the Henus are, they're Himalayan.
Himalayan?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I like Himalayan food.
As
Nepalese,
as you should. Yeah. There's some great Nepal food, Nepalese food around
but
here.
So they're Germans who live in Himalayas.
Well, it's typically a German name.
Are they Sherpas?
So you do know them.
Oh, okay. So they're guiding people up Mount Everest.
The
other side.
No.
Oh, okay.
No.
They're guiding people away from Mount Everest.
They're Sherpas, but they Sherpa you to hotels.
Oh, okay.
So it's very localized Sherping.
Sherpa-ing.
Yeah, exactly.
I gotcha.
But hey, a job's a job. You gotta earn that scratch.
Exactly. Samantha Hiltz?
Yes.
I don't know where she's from.
She's from... Brisbane,
Australia.
Yeah, wow. Yeah, she's from Brisbane, Australia.
Yep.
Have you ever heard of a Hilti drill?
No.
So that's a kind of a, well, they're a manufacturer, Hilti. They make
make
power tools and such. And she's an heir to that family.
But
fortune.
It's Hilts.
No, I know. They made the name longer for marketing. Hilti.
I gotcha. Because
it sounds more adorable. And you want your tools to sound adorable.
I don't want to go into adorable sounding tools.
Okay, well, I'm just saying. Trust me.
Sarah Taplin from Manitoba.
Hey!
That's Grandview, Manitoba.
Grandview?
Yeah.
Wow.
Tasha Halderson from St. Albert, Alberta.
Thank you, Tasha.
That's a lot of Alberts.
That's yeah, an excess of Alberts.
Tia Jenking from Mattawa, Ontario.
Never heard of it.
Mattawa.
Never heard of it.
A Mattawa is actually, I think, what Carol has referred to as the name of the religious police in Saudi Arabia. And they go around with like a bamboo cane, and they hit the ladies on the ankles who are wearing clothing that is too revealing. And so hopefully that's not what's happening to you, Tia Jenking.
Wow.
Yeah.
Ankle smacks.
Exactly. Nick Mohar Shirts.
Hey, Nick.
Thank you, Nick. He is a prime minister.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, right?
Wow, Nick.
So, Nick, thank you so much. We really appreciate having people become prime ministers.
Oh, man, yeah.
But guess what?
What?
Lydia B. Fiedler is also a PM.
Holy crappers.
And she's from Austin, Texas.
Austin, Texas.
So, one's from Williamsport, Maryland. Another one from Austin, Texas. Holy crap.
See, this is what Canada is about, though. You don't even have to be from Canada to be a prime minister here.
That's correct.
You know, like, so wow, thank you guys.
And I mean, Lydia's a very familiar name. We see her in the Yumber Yard a lot.
Damn, skippy, we
as
do.
We do Nick, as well as this next person.
Oh, yes.
Liz Overheiser.
She's been there for, she's an OG-er, I think.
She's from one of my favorite places to say.
What's that?
Kalamazoo, Michigan.
That is a great name.
Kalamazoo.
Kalamazoo, Kalamazing, Kalamizops, anytime you wing. There.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a beautiful song.
Susan Latondra, she is another Yumber Yarder.
Yes.
But I don't know where she's from.
No, you don't?
No.
She posts it all the time.
Yep.
Yeah.
Where's she from?
Timbuktu.
Well, how about them apples?
I don't think they have apples in Timbuktu.
Okay, what do they have there? Guava?
They do have some guava. Primarily eggs that grow on trees.
That's messed up.
Is what? You're telling me.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
Well, so thank you, Susan. I hope you enjoy your guava and eggs.
Tree eggs.
Tree eggs.
Yeah.
Savannah Harris.
Oh.
I think Savannah...
Yeah.
...is not from Georgia.
Then where else could she be? I thought everybody has to be named after the city they were born in.
No, she is not from Savannah, Georgia.
Oh.
She is from Saskatchewan.
Well, there's an S involved.
Right?
Yeah, I mean, that's close enough.
Yep.
It's close enough. Wow.
And you know what she does for work? Crop dusting.
Whoa.
Yeah, she has a really old plane.
Uh-huh. And does she hang her butt off of the back and toot?
No, she doesn't toot. She actually does
it's not
like
that kind of crop dusting.
No, it's like actual crops.
Oh, I'm thinking just like big long fart sears flying in the back of the plane.
It's not that kind of crop dusting. Well, that's disgusting.
Because I, in my mind, I was thinking, shit, you can get paid for that?
You should be.
Oh, I'm going to be a millionaire.
Yeah, exactly. Jessica Hawker.
Hey, Hawker.
Yeah.
Hawker.
I don't know where she's from.
Of course you don't. Why would you?
Well... Do you know her?
Yes.
Really well?
We went to school together.
Oh, dear.
In Indonesia.
You've never been to Indonesia.
I went to school there.
What did you... Were you taking something specific in Indonesia?
Yes.
What? Indonesian?
Math.
This would explain your lack of mathematic ability?
Yeah.
Well, I would think... Well, I don't want to racially profile, so I don't know about...
Well, guess who my math teacher was?
Who? Jessica Hawker.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, well, there you go.
Mm-hmm. So, but...
So, thanks for teaching Scott how not to do math.
Yeah, my lack of mathing is not her fault.
Okay.
She's a great math teacher. Numbers just break me.
It's true.
I consider phone numbers math.
They're just a random assortment of numbers that will connect you to a specific person.
They're numbers. You had me at numbers.
Right, I guess so.
Yeah.
And we've already mentioned that. Maria E. Parker, and she's from Saanich, British Columbia.
I'd like to eat a Saanich right now.
I'd like to eat a sandwich, too.
Yeah.
I don't know what I'm going to eat for a sandwich.
How about a...
I like peanut butter sandwich.
Ham and mayonnaise sandwich.
You can't have peanut butter sandwich in
your I can't, and it's tragic, because, man, I do love me some peanut butter.
So you come over here and have peanutty things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's like, I don't drink or smoke or anything. I just sneak out and have peanut butter.
Oh, jeez.
You do what you got to do, Mike.
Exactly. All right, we do have some PayPal, PayPal-y kind of stuff going on here.
PayPalians.
What's this? Bonet Terrio sending more money. Like, how many times do we have to say your name? It's awesome.
Oh, my goodness.
Monet.
And as far as names go, it's a bloody fantastic name.
It is a very French name.
Hey, Monet Terrio.
Mon ami.
Oh.
Yes.
I don't know what that means, but it's
I think it's amazing me because she is our friend.
Yeah.
Well, thank you, Monet.
Monet.
And, whoa.
Well?
Somebody named Mamiwi Gibishwin.
Okay.
Sent us a really big donation.
Holy crappers.
Well, the biggest one we've got. It's
yeah.
Yeah. So thank you very, very much, Mamiwi. I'm very sorry I have slaughtered your name.
Uh-huh.
But it looks like a culture that I'm not exactly familiar with.
Well, that'd be most of them.
Yeah, right. Other than Irish. If it's not Irish or Dutch or German, I don't know.
You're done.
I'm donezo.
But, wow, thank you for this donation.
Yeah, so thank you. Thank you very much.
Seriously.
Yeah. So you're like a triple PM.
Yeah.
This week.
Try them.
Yeah, so
wow.
We appreciate that a great deal.
We really do.
We really do.
We really do.
Thanks so much to our patrons past and present for your pledges. We really appreciate your support of the show. If you want to help support us, you can do so by becoming a patron at patreon.com/darkpoutine, or for one-time support, you can send us some donut money via PayPal at our email address, darkpoutinepodcast@gmail.com. If you don't already, it would mean a lot to us if you subscribe to the show. You can easily find us on iTunes, Podcast, Google Play, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spotify, or wherever else you get your on-demand audio. Check out our website, darkpoutine.com, for show notes and other cool stuff. Our Facebook page, Twitter, and Instagram, just search for Dark Poutine. Come on to the Yumber Yard. We're over 5,000 there.
Lots of Yumber.
Yes, absolutely. Most importantly, tell your friends about us. Word of mouth is a powerful thing.
Hell yeah.
And interestingly, I had a meeting this past week with the podcast festival here in Vancouver,
mm-hmm.
and they want us to do some headlining there.
Sweet sassy molassy.
So that will mean that you will be able to come on out and support Scott and I at a live show, perhaps at the Rio Theater.
This is mind-blowing.
Right?
It's mind-blowing. It's almost kind of like a...
We get to be like Spike and Mike.
It's kind of like a dream come true in many regards.
Right?
Like, whoa.
So jeez. I have to get to designing this live show for us. Plus, there's lots more coming. I can't reveal details yet. However, there are some really big shows. Really big shoes. That you will probably have heard of, and they are not all necessarily Canadian. So...
Holy crap.
Yeah, it's going to be a great podcast festival this year. I'm super looking forward to it. Like, we had a great time last year. We got to meet Navara. And I got to do a couple of panels. So I guess we'll be doing that. We might be doing an event that is outside of that as well at the same time for our local Yumberyard and Dark Poutine listeners.
It's going to be a busy week.
It is going to be a busy week. It will be taking place between October 7th and 10th.
Sweet.
So, clear your schedule for that.
Yes, clear it now. I'll clear it for you.
There you go. Until next week, which will be an away game before we take a week off. Because I'm taking a week off. I need a week off.
Yeah, take a week off. Yeah.
Away game, Scott.
Mm-hmm.
So...
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be an interesting one.
Let's travel to it.
Yeah, we're gonna hop in probably a time machine.
A time machine.
And probably like a jet.
A Learjet?
Well,
or a propeller?
Could be. Some jalopy.
It's a biplane.
Beep, 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 beep. It's our crop dusting friend.
All man the back.
Yeah, with the farts. Exactly. So until next week, don't forget to be a good egg and not a bad apple.
Bye-bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Hi, it's Shauna, and I might be a bad parent because my kids think french fries are vegetables.
Hey, it's Ryan, and I might be a bad parent because I went out for wings when my wife was in the hospital after giving birth.
Johnny here. I might be a bad parent because in my house, the tooth fairy gives pocket change.
But we're not alone. Len emailed us and said his six-year-old daughter's Tarzan moment going from love seat to lazy boy by curtains made him more proud than any dance recital.
And Andy left his two-year-old at the rink.
All right, guys, I'm sure we're not alone. Like Andy's kid.
For stories and confessions like this, make sure you check out our podcast.
It's called Bad Parents, and it's available wherever you get your podcasts.
I left a glove at the rink.